It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. I'm Lisa Brady. This has been a week of unspeakable tragedy as an 18-year-old gunman unleashed evil on the small city of Uvalde, Texas, killing 19 children and 2 teachers and stunning a tight-knit community. Each day since the attack has brought more information about the horrific events at Robb Elementary School, mainly in a fourth-grade classroom, just a few days before summer break. The killer had recently purchased 2 guns. He shot and wounded his grandmother just before the attack and warned he was about to target an elementary school in what Facebook says were private messages, not public posts. The mass shooting quickly reignited the national debate about gun laws. Questions are also being raised about school security and the timeline of the multi-agency response to this attack. On the day after the shooting, before many of those questions had surfaced, we spoke with Texas Republican Congressman Tony Gonzalez, whose district includes Uvalde. We made some edits for time and thought you might like to hear the whole thing. Thanks for listening. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the weekday Fox News Rundown podcast. Now here's Congressman Tony Gonzalez on the Fox News Rundown Extra. I did want to ask you about the fact that this tragedy in Uvalde has quickly turned up the heat in the debate over gun laws, punctuated by former Congressman Beto O'Rourke confronting the governor at a briefing in Uvalde. He was basically shouted out of the room by other officials, not the governor. It's fair to say, though, this is a very sensitive issue.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of people are very upset, ultimately. And I will say, you know, there's a lot of politicians that try to score political points. Now's not the time for any of that. I mean, my community of Uvalde is turned upside down. You know, I actually grew up 38 miles from here in Camp Wood, 500 people in this town. And so Uvalde is really home, and it's a very tight-knit community. It's about an hour and a half from San Antonio. It's an agriculture committee, community. Everybody knows everyone. And to score political points, we don't need that. We need people to come together and unify in one, helping us heal, helping Uvalde heal, and then ultimately get to a point where there isn't another Uvalde that takes place.
You have been strong in your support of Second Amendment rights. Do these kinds of horrific events make that position more difficult?
Now, I believe in the Constitution. I swore an oath to the Constitution when I was 18 years old, did 20 years in the military. I swore an oath to the Constitution as a member of Congress. I believe in our country. What I will say is, you know, I represent, my district's very large. It goes from San Antonio to El Paso, larger than 30 states, and I actually represent 119 cities. And when I visited Uvalde about over a year ago, we sat down with the county judge, who's a Democrat, the mayor, who's a Republican, and the sheriff. And we sit down and I go, hey, if there's one thing I can do for you, what would that be? And all of them, we all agreed that it would be a new mental health facility. So we started working on it, collaborating together, and the county actually donated land for this. So that's done. I was able to secure $2 million through a community project, but the project is $20 million. I say all that to go, we need to have communities come together and get to the forefront of any kind of crisis. And I think part of that is addressing the mental health issue. It's certainly growing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, have you heard from many constituents about the shooting or about the mental health issue even before the shooting?
Even before the shooting, I mean, the day of, this is something that really hasn't made it out. You know, the day of the shooting, the Uvalde Sheriff's Department actually transported a young woman to San Antonio because she was having, you know, suicide ideations. So it's there. It's happening every single day, but there was no facility for them to go to. So that's one need in there. The other part is, you know, how can we protect our children going forward? I think there's a lot of different ideas. I mean, look, I'm of the mindset You can be passionate about who you are and what you represent, but you can. We need to get back to having a conversation with one another and not this spewing rhetoric and calling names and just blaming each other for all these horrific things that are happening. We should come together and we should go, hey, what works? What can we do to make sure our children, our innocent children, aren't slaughtered anywhere?
The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has issued a call for bipartisan work on the issue. Moderate Democratic Senator Joe Manchin has said he would consider expanded background checks and red flag laws to be common sense legislation. Do you see any areas of common ground on those proposals or others?
You know, I think sadly it takes a tragedy to bring attention to an issue. And, you know, a lot of these people that you mentioned, they're politicians. They're career politicians, and they view the world solely through a political lens. And I'll be more specific. You know, last week, nonetheless, I got a visit from Max, I can't remember, Sharhart, and he's the father of one of the victims of Parkland. And he sits in my office, and we start talking about it, and he goes, Tony, you know, we really need to protect our schools. There's a piece of legislation called the Alex and Luke Act. And he walks me through it. I go, Max, I'm a father of six. I agree with you. I get pulled in all these different directions like these other members. But yes, so let's bring it up. And he goes to mention that Schumer was actually the one that kind of prevented some of this. So, I mean, I don't want to point fingers, but what I get at, what I'd like for us to do, let's sit down. Let's talk about real issues, real problems, and find ways to help folks, not just score political points with our own party.
What do you say, though, to people who maybe aren't politicians and are, you know, critical of some of the things that you've said and the positions you've taken? Because you have gotten a lot of pushback on social media for gun rights positions and people, you know, kind of saying, hey, we don't need more thoughts and prayers. We need action.
I would say we absolutely need more thoughts and prayers. I'm a man of faith. I represent a community that is very faith-based. And when you lose everything, I mean, faith is oftentimes the only thing you have left. So we absolutely need to love one another and treat each other, you know, in a positive way. You know, what I'll also say is, you don't have to be a member of Congress to make a difference. And I'm going to take my member of Congress hat off, and I'm going to put my father hat on. And the first thing I thought, I've got six children. Two of them are elementary school age. So as I'm hearing these stories and I'm getting these briefings, just very disturbing. And the first thing that came to mind was, I need to call my school and go, what are our procedures if there's an active shooter event? One, is there a single entry point? Two, do we have teachers that are armed, or do we have resource officers? I mean, these are all things I think every parent can do. Be more involved in your school and make sure that your children are protected. You know, if we're relying on politicians to get us over the finish line, especially on some of these tough issues, we're going to be relying on, forever, if you will.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
There has been a call, especially from Republicans, for schools to be made harder targets. Do you think there hasn't been enough of that in enough places, especially in smaller communities?
You know, what I see, I represent an urban area and a rural area, and what I'm seeing is this greater divide between urban America and rural America, where in rural America, the resources are so stretched thin, you don't have money to, let's say, talk about security of a facility, because you're trying to keep the lights on and keep the teachers paid. So I think we need to do more of that. I also think we need to have kind of this all-of-the-above approach. Like, let's look at all of it. Let's talk about it. Let's have a discussion on it. But I think it only works if you have less politicians that want to do that and more people that genuinely want to see our children safe, not only in schools, but in churches, in malls, everywhere. And part of that discussion is the mental health part of it. I mean, I don't care who you are. Everyone deals with mental health, and we need to actually devote more time and energy and resources towards that. I think part of that discussion starts in Congress.
Do you think it seems like there's this kind of permanent dividing line between those who want to focus mainly on the guns and the purchasing of the guns and those who argue, you know, guns don't kill people, people kill people? Is that a permanent dividing line? Is there any way to kind of bridge that gap to finally make some progress on the issue of gun violence?
You know, I think what often happens is you have the parties that you kind of go to your corner and you talk to your base and you kind of keep things going. I'm optimistic if we have more people in, let's just say, Congress that have never served before, that are more focused on solutions and less focused on getting reelected. That's how we ultimately bridge it. If we have the glue that comes us, that brings us together. Because at the end of the day, when there's a horrific accident or event like this mass shooting that occurred, everybody's impacted. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat, Republican. They don't ask who your father was or your mother. You know, it's just everybody's impacted. And we got to be able, and this is not only on violence, on a lot of things. We're Americans. We have more in common than we don't, and we have to stop with the hateful rhetoric and be more positive and more solution-oriented.
The governor has called for a focus on supporting the families and the community. What's the best way to do that, Congressman? You know this area so well.
Yeah, you know, I actually visited the Victim Resource Center here in Uvalde, and there was actually families in there getting a variety of different resources. I would say this right now. I mean, there's a lot of resources that are sent our way, but everyone is in a state of shock. And what I suspect is going to happen, you know, give it a few days, and then all of a sudden that shock is going to settle in, and people are really going to be hit with the tragedy. You know, I've got families that have to bury children, and you know, it's just, there's a lot of different things going on. But the number one issue. The number one need that the community of Uvalde needs is we need mental health clinicians to not only talk to the victims, not only talk to the survivors, but to talk to the community in general, because it is as if our heart has been ripped out and we need to heal and come together. Part of that is having professionals that can help move that along.
Texas Republican Congressman Tony Gonzalez, thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thank you.
We also spoke to Fox's Evan Brown in Uvalde on the day after the shooting. He spoke to local residents and those impacted by the tragedy. We again made some edits for time and thought you might like to hear the whole thing. Now here's Fox's Evan Brown on the Fox News Rundown Extra. Let me jump right in then. I wanted to start out by asking you, what is this community doing so far to try to cope with this horror and this grief?
I think the word, and it may be an overused word, is they're processing. They're still trying to figure out how this happened and why someone who lives among them did this to them. This was not a stranger. This was not a person who traveled a great distance and selected a target after meticulous planning to try to make some kind of message about racial warfare, or something that we had to experience a couple weeks ago in Buffalo, New York. This is someone who lived literally about two blocks away from the school. And in fact, most of these kids who went to the school lived within a few blocks, I have to imagine. This elementary school, it's a small school, is smack dab in the middle of a neighborhood. There are people who live across the street, across a very narrow street, the kind of street you would see kids riding their bikes on without worrying about traffic, that kind of neighborhood. And that's where the school is. And this gunman lived not too far. After he shot his own grandmother in the face, took the car and started driving towards the school, crashed the car, ran into the school, and in one particular classroom did what he did.
The motive remains under investigation, the specific motive at least. But the governor did have a briefing in Uvalde Wednesday, the day after the shooting, and did offer some more information about that timeline.
Correct. We had a bit more specifics, if you will, about the minute-by-minute play out of this event, and that's where we learned that he shot his grandmother in the face. We had heard that she had been shot by him, but that she had shot him in the face, and then she proceeded with her wound to call 911 and to alert them that he was on a rampage. And I think perhaps the biggest news to come within these past hours has been that one of the tactical responders was not a local officer or deputy, but was an off-duty border patrol agent who serves on the tactical team there. So he had the expertise and the assets and the equipment to be able to do that kind of work, sort of on demand but off-duty, to assist this local agency. And I know a lot of people are sitting there going, well, what is a border patrol agent doing in this Texas town? Well, this Texas town, Uvalde, is not all that far from the U.S. border with Mexico. It is a commuting distance. Most people, when they go live somewhere, they want to be in a commuting distance from work. Well, a border patrol agent works at the border. This is where they're going to live. And it's possible that we know there are others who live here. There were some that have their kids in these schools or had their kids in the local schools. They are the neighbors. And so happens, this was the person who was able to respond along with the local police. And this border patrol agent is the one who took the fatal shot to end the rampage.
There was also more information about how it was a multi-agency response. In addition to that off-duty Border Patrol agent, there are multiple, you know, officers from different law enforcement agencies that responded. And there was the school, what we might call a school resource officer in other parts of the country, was also part of the
Correct.
Response. And it's really a harrowing tale of how they went around saving lives, breaking windows to get people out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, there was great communication, obviously, and cooperation. You know, I think we are very far away from the old days where people held fast to jurisdictions and one group didn't talk to another and you're on your own with this or don't you intrude on ours. Those walls have come down, really, I think, since 9/11. And because of that, there's this amazing mutual aid from multiple levels. Yes, the school system here has their own small police force. The town has its own police force. There's a county sheriff. There's also state law enforcement. Texas loves its state law enforcement. There's, you know, highway patrol and the Rangers and the like. And then there are the feds who can come in as well, and they can bring much more investigative resources after the fact. They're the ones that can comb through this young man's life and try to put together a bit of an explanation as to what went wrong that he decided to get this violent this quickly and commit the acts that he committed.
We do know now from the governor that he had posted some private messages online really within about a half an hour before the shooting, right? Which I guess would have been a warning, but these wouldn't have been publicly seen.
They may not have been publicly seen, or as you know, with social media, if you have no followers or have very few followers, you know, most people really aren't going to see what you're posting unless they're looking for it. So these messages, which I believe were posted on Facebook, they said, "I'm going to shoot my grandmother. I did shoot my grandmother. Now I'm going to go shoot up an elementary school." These were all made within the span of a half hour, 40 minutes, and usually minutes before the specific act was carried out. They may not have been really helpful in terms of trying to prevent anything. They're more helpful now in the aftermath, where they can be used to corroborate a timeline or a theory that the investigators may have about when things actually happened on a minute-by-minute or hour-by-hour basis.
Once the shooting was over, it was a long wait, overnight in some cases, for some parents to find out if their kids were okay, if they were among the dead. That has to have made this whole situation even worse. Is there just a sense of shock, collective shock at this point?
Oh, totally there is. I mean, you had a number of parents waiting at a downtown civic center for information. In some cases, they were asked for saliva swabs for making matches. When they ask for that, it's because perhaps the face isn't recognizable anymore. And I don't know that for a fact. I'm just supposing. You know, these were very young kids, 9, 10 years old. They might not have had dental records yet. You know, how many dental x-rays do you get your kids that young? And not to mention it's sort of the age where they're losing some teeth, right? They're getting rid of the baby teeth and getting the big boy and big girl teeth. So records might not have been good enough or accurate enough to be able to make IDs. And if the child was not recognizable, the last thing you want to do to this parent is ask them to take a look. So maybe doing some kind of other test, some kind of medical test, they're able to provide that confirmation and then let the you know, make that notification to the parent. In some of these cases, these parents were up through the night and didn't get that final word until early this morning. So you can imagine just how long of a night that must have been.
Mm-hmm. I know you spoke with some of the families who are trying to process all of this and you know, whether they have someone who they've lost or someone who survived. Either way, it's a lot to process.
Sure. I spoke with a gentleman by the name of Cody Iduarte, who actually lives a couple hours away in an even smaller town than Uvalde. And he has relatives here, and he was working, and he got word that there was a shooting, and he made some phone calls, and later on at night, found out some very devastating news about a little cousin, and I'll play a little bit of our conversation.
Amory Garza is the daughter of a cousin of mine, and I haven't been able to speak to him yet. We're probably going to go over there and talk to him after this. It's just difficult. It's just difficult to think that, because we have children the same age, and it's difficult to think of his loss. You know, of the loss that he's facing right now. I mean, what can you say about that? You know,
there is actually one more thing he can say, because that wasn't the only child in the family to be affected in this. Another child of that family, another little cousin, was also shot, and that child, Lisa, lived.
She was the one that survived. She was, I believe what they said is that she was shot 5 times, and praise God that the doctors were able to save her life. They actually, the news had originally reported that she had died, but it turns out that doctors were able to save her.
So just think of that for a moment.
Yeah.
Being incredibly sad and incredibly grateful at the same time. But again, we began this conversation about processing. And I don't know how you process that. I don't have the expertise as an adult or as a parent myself to even think of the steps you would take.
One of the points the governor made is that there's no mental health hospital in the immediate area. Do you hear people in the community talking about that, about the need for mental health services in general?
I think that conversation comes up a lot anyway. Look, we're sort of out in the sticks here. You know, an hour and a half away is San Antonio, a rather sizable city with a fantastic hospital system or two. And those services are certainly available there. But there isn't much here in the way of long-term psychiatric care, counseling and the whatnot. It may be very limited. There probably is, to a degree, crisis intervention. And that's a very important thing that may not get as much use as it needs to be used in many communities for a number of reasons. But the governor did talk about that. And you know, one of the things that can happen, of course, is states can spend money building new facilities. But He said, you know, a building doesn't treat patients, you know, professionals do. So there needs to be a way to not just build a building, but to have the professionals here to do that kind of important work. One of the ways off the top of my head to help maybe alleviate that problem is something that we all became rather familiar with during the pandemic, and the industry has certainly taken off, is telemedicine. It's quite easy now using a smart device or computer to get a hold of a counselor and to have regular sessions and things like that. Perhaps maybe there's a way to do that with crisis intervention too as a new tool. That's something, you know, policymakers from the town level up to the state level are going to have to talk about. But in this situation, it is evident that this young man was having a crisis of some sort. Someone doesn't get that rageful overnight or within a couple of hours. Something was building, and we do know that there were problems. There are stories about it, but very little to anything was actually done. Certainly nothing actionable was done that would have led to some kind of paper trail or permanent record that would have come up in a background check when he went to buy his firearm.
This shooting has instantly rekindled the debate about gun laws. Are people talking about that in Uvalde?
Not yet, I don't think. You know, this is very red Texas. I don't think that people are going to have the immediate reaction that we've seen in other parts of the country about strengthening restrictions on guns, on long guns being able to be bought by someone aged 18 or over. But I think, and what the governor said as well sort of echoes this, that mental health issues need to be taken more seriously, not just in the scope of long-term counseling and finding care for people. That obviously has to happen, but also the mental health aspect of these background checks. You know, if we are going to treat kids with kid gloves and not put them into the proper systems to safe them, safe the community, and maybe get them help, we end up with violent people who become, you know, they grow up, they become adults, legal adults, and there's nothing in a record that prevents them from buying a gun when we have a known case of someone being very violent. We had this exact situation with the Parkland shooter. We had a very similar situation with this Sandy Hook shooter. We had a very similar situation with the Columbine shooters. This is the pattern more than anything, not the availability of firearms, because this seems to be more the commonality, the common denominator. And I would say to people, look, there are crisis counseling services usually in practically every community. And if you know someone in crisis, your family member or you yourself, you know, I think people sometimes they might be too overwhelmed. They don't pursue it. They don't know that it's there. Or maybe they're just afraid of the stigma. What will someone think if a crisis counselor had to visibly come to our house and deal with my child or my sibling or whatever, my spouse? I would ask people to sort of find the inner strength to push past that and make use of those counseling services, those crisis services, because when you don't, there could just be awful, awful consequences.
It strikes me how quiet it sounds in Uvalde. I can hear the birds chirping as you're speaking. It's the tranquility that's inherent there is going to help with the healing process.
It's a quiet town. I think even over by the main street, even the traffic is very light. It's just a soft din. It's not busy, heavy, screeching tires, honking horns. It is a small town. And, early this morning, you know, waiting for the sun to come up, sitting on, you know, in the car on the streets near the school, I heard a rooster crow. And then I heard another, and then I heard another. I thought I was just hearing the same rooster crowing over and over again. No, I saw practically, you know, every 5 feet, these wild roosters, running around and making their morning noises. And that's the type of town that we're in here. Everyone pretty much knows everybody. You know, when you come from a small town, your neighbor might be mayor. And even if it's not, you're probably on a first-name basis with the mayor. may or might even be part-time, right? And that's kind of what this town is like. I mean, everyone knows everyone, or knows someone who knows someone, all in the best ways. And so that's why I think it's specifically harder to even contemplate that the person who did this was very likely a neighbor, someone they might have passed by just on any old day of the week.
Fox's Evan Brown reporting in Uvalde. Thank you so much for your time, Evan. Stay safe.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. New from the Fox News Podcasts Network.
My name is Kennedy, and welcome to my podcast, which will, I humbly say, single-handedly save the world. You're welcome.
It's Kennedy Saves the World. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.